And welcome. You are listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City, your host for Art on the Air. Hey, our 2019 underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, and our landlord, Walt Brighton, here in this beautiful building. If you'd like to find out about leasing space, we have wonderful artist studios available here. Contact him at 219-462-5821. That's 462-5821. And thank you for your generous support. We always like to thank Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager.
Yeah, thank you so much, Greg.
And Esther is now engineering the show, so we're flying here. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest on our show or about our arts-related event up here, or whatever you want to do, send us anything. We have a wonderful email, and we'd like to see that. It's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. And the show is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Also, if you'd like to hear our show archive, we put that up. It's at breck.com/AOTA. That is breck, BREC.com/AOTA for Art on the Air. And you can hear our past episodes and you can hear what we're doing here, everything. So, like, remember that, you know, this radio is not exactly free. We are a community radio station and we're always looking for your support. You know, we look for support from individual listeners, show specific station underwriters. They make a big part of the WVLP family. So, if you're interested in underwriting the show, you can always give to us. We have basic underwriting levels, intermediate, higher levels, major awards. And the advantage of that is not only will you be supporting this station, but we will be showing the support for that. And if you'd specifically like to do our show, Art on the Air, we would love it.
We would so love it, yes.
It would be great. So if you're interested in doing that, it's very easy. Go to WVLP.org/support. That's WVLP/support. And you can find out information about supporting whatever level you can. We would encourage you to do so. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel real good about giving to WVLP and supporting the station. So off we go to Porter County and our arts calendar. First up, Valparaiso University Center for Arts, Brower Museum, continuing through the end of this month, March 31st. There's still Icons on Ammo Boxes. That's art by Sofia Altanova and Alscarendo Clemenco. I always love to get those names.
I know, those names are so great.
Just going for the names alone, they're fantastic. Also in the exhibit there is Line, Force, and Burn Rubber from Sarah Kremp and Olivia Petrides. And finally, The Art of Lynn Olson. Those are all at the Brower Museum through the end of the month. I think this week the Brower is closed because they're on spring break. So remember catching that. So if you're listening to us on this Friday, I think they're closed. They will reopen on Monday. At the Elm Firm Gallery, US 12 in Beverly Shores still has characters by Irene Brown. She's known as a docent at the Beverly Shores Depot, you know, and she'll be running through the end of March. You see these wonderful creative little caricatures by her. I went to the opening of that. Just a wonderful show, and she's a joy to see. The Village Gallery at Pines has Doris Meyer's exhibit that opened on March 3rd. It's Trees, Rocks, and Water, a Collection of Reflections, and that's at the Village Gallery, Pines Village Circle in Valparaiso. You can look them up online or on Facebook. Chesterton Arts Center, well, this month is their Duneland School Corporation show. They just had their high school show, and it was a wonderful, almost, I went to the opening, just absolutely creative. But now they're going to be moving to the K-8 show in both galleries. They'll be running March 16th through March 30th, and they will have an opening reception on Wednesday, March 20th from 6 to 7:30. I'll tell you, that one is always packed because all the moms, dads, grandmas, and grandpas are there.
They're always wonderful exhibits. I enjoy them so much.
So Chesterton Arts Center, that's just on 4th Street, just south of Broadway in Chesterton. You can't miss it. It's a beautiful little gallery with a red door. The Art Barn, they have their 2019 children's exhibit. They'll be opening March 16th and running through April 27th. And each year, our children's exhibit, they celebrate artists from 5 to 18 from things they made throughout the year. You can find out things about them at artbarnindiana@gmail.com. They're on the web and on Facebook. Memorial Opera House. Well, I didn't take this off, but they just closed Shrek. So, but they actually ran an extra week, but I forgot to take it off my list. Duo Sequenza, Deborah Sievert, flautist, and Paul Bowman, a classical guitarist. They have an entire series of concerts, and there's so many to list. They started this. It'll be running March 11th through April 7th, and you can find out information from them at Duo, that's D-O-U, Sequenza. It's all one word, C-S-E Q-U-E-N-Z-A. That's D-U-O-S-E-Q enza.com, and they have an entire calendar of things, events all over Northwest Indiana. That's all I have for Porter County. What do we have in LaPorte County?
That's really good. We've got a lot of things happening in LaPorte County. At the Lubeznik Center for the Arts, they're exhibiting Nature Versus Everything through June 8th. It features 9 contemporary artists with work that is a new environmentally minded exhibit that explores the perilous battle between humanity and the natural world. In the Susan Block Gallery upstairs is a large-scale installation. It starts with an animated video of a charcoal-drawn landscape with its inhabitants and extends into 3 colorful dimensions so that the viewer becomes part of the art. On April 27th from 1 to 5 p.m., this is the second year of the Zine and Small Press Fest. So Press Fest 2019, there's 30 independent authors, publishers, artists, and activists, and the admission is free. I went last year. It was really exciting. Southern Shore Art Association. The March exhibit is Old, New, and Renewed. The gallery is located at 724 Franklin Street, and they are open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 to 5 p.m. Or visit their website, southernshoreartassociation.com, or their Facebook page, Southern Shore Art Association. SFC Gallery will host Artist Appreciation Night on Friday, March 15th from 5 to 8 p.m. In LaPorte, the Thaddeus C. Gallery is located in the downtown, and their hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Their phone number, 219-326-8626, or on the web at thaddeusc.com. Blink Contemporary Art at 1709 Franklin Street is exhibiting work by Rick Lang and Suzanne Cohen Lang. Rising Phoenix Gallery at 2803 South Franklin Street. Their current exhibit is called Threads of Life, and it is a group exhibition of artists who work in the medium of fibers, fabrics, and textiles, and it is showing through the end of the month. The Nest at 803 Franklin Street is exhibiting the work of over 20 local artists in celebration of International Women's Day. We have both 2D and 3D work, plus a film of a live performance by Elise Kermani, and that will be on view. And we will be announcing an opening soon, probably in the next couple weeks, because one party was just not enough. So we're going to do another one.
You're
just
so
for
busy
the artists.
There.
So March 17th, from 1 to 3 p.m., we have the Mindful Fiber Artists Gathering, and that does take place monthly, and it's all fiber artists are welcome. Bring a project to work on or just something to show and tell. There's like so much talent in this group. If you need some input on a project you're doing, this group can try and help you. Starting again weekly, also March 17th from 1 to 3 p.m., which will be kind of exciting to mix these two groups, will be Oil Painting Plus with Michelle Weiser. The plus means if you would rather bring a watercolor, a drawing, or a mixed media piece to work on and benefit from Michelle's vast professional experience, please do so. She will be guiding us once again on the medium of oil paints. No painting experience to the most accomplished artists will benefit from Michelle's guidance. She's a gifted artist and instructor. Details on the Facebook event listing for the Nest Michigan City. The first and third Monday of each month, the Singing Sands Toastmasters meet. March 18th is the next meeting, and it'll also be the charter party for the newly formed group. Guests are always welcome to these meetings. Become a better communicator and leader with Toastmasters. Now, here we go. We're going to have to do our Captain Ambivalent music. March 23rd at 7 p.m., the monthly Every Kind of Talent Show with Captain Ambivalent takes place. It's a vaudeville meets show and tell meets open mic. The lineup is looking really robust for March 23rd, Saturday. It's very varied, so please sign up if you're moved to do so. Or signing up the night of is all right, pending on time and space left available. March 30th at 7 p.m., we have a blues evening with Keith Scott. Keith has met and jammed with blues legends Buddy Guy, Junior Wells, James Cotton, and Little Milton, to name a few. And he toured with the Jimmy Dawkins Blues Band and traveled the world with them. The best way to reach us is either email the Nest Michigan City, all smashed together at gmail.com, or on Facebook, the Nest Michigan City. And we will be trying these gallery hours Thursday through Saturday, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., but we're probably going to be there till 7. And Wednesdays, those same hours except the second Wednesday of each month. So please call ahead or email to make sure. The number 219-262-5200. And as always, other times by arrangement.
You know, things are really happening at your nest there.
It's a very busy little place.
That's fantastic. You know? Well, we'll move on to Lake County for our things. The 119th Street Artists are sponsoring their Under 18 show. It will run April 9th through May 4th at the Cornerstone Art Gallery. That's the Centier Bank in Whiting. And unfortunately, we just heard that this and probably one more summer exhibit, they'll be out of there in the fall because the bank is expanding into the space they use. So that's another arts group that does hurt. So my point is that you need to get out and support these galleries by your presence and, of course, by purchasing. It's important to get out there.
It is, to support our local community.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these art groups are struggling with spaces and things like that.
And it doesn't mean that, I mean, the talent is overwhelming in our region. So the talent is there. We just need people to come and see the work.
Exactly. Well, the reception for that show is a little ways off. It's April 13th. So there are information online. You can look up 119th Street Artists either online or on the Facebook, and they'll give you more information about it. It's a great little gallery space. Go out there and support the Under 18 show. South Shore Arts, the spring art classes, their enrollment is closing soon. They would like to start their classes on March 25th. So some of the classes may already be filled. Tom Torlinki's got his Monday 6 to 8:30 figure drawing class. Tom is an extraordinarily talented artist, but these are closing up. Their exhibits are there. They now have in the Bachman Gallery Haunts, and if you haven't seen it, it's a remarkable exhibit running through April 21st. These were where guerrilla photographers go into all these spaces throughout the area, and the one that struck me is Dennis Crane, the photographer who shot a lot of the stars at Star Plaza Theater, did a whole series of the tearing down of the Star Plaza, of Twin Towers, and just kind of a whole retrospective. You can see it one visit there. But they're amazing, the interior shots of like the Old Methodist Church and all over. It's a remarkable exhibit.
Is it color in black and white represented?
Both are represented by different artists. It's a whole wide range of artists from Chicago, Northwest Indiana, everything. So that's in the gallery. That'll be going through April 21st. You have to get a chance to see that. It's just a remarkable exhibit. The Atrium Gallery, James Wachowiak is there through March 24th, and his art is out there. Then the Toll Theater, this is the last weekend for Laurie Shimmer Carpenter, Oil, her Midwest Reflections. They'll have a new artist sometime next month, but it's not been announced yet. Cafe Fresco, Brianna Milhalovich, The Region at a Glimpse, and that'll be running through April 28th in Crown Point. South Shore Artful Garden in Crown Point has Kasia Sesanuski, Beyond the White Gardens, and that'll be running through April 27th. You can find out all that information on South Shore Arts website or on Facebook. Studio 659, Worn Out, Worn In, Well Worn and Gently Used, is their new exhibit. It's arts that wears this idea on their sleeve of the show. It has an opening reception on March 22nd. I just dropped off a couple pieces there for there. You can find out about them at Studio 659, or they're on the web, Facebook also, for information about it. But their reception is March 22nd, 5 to 7. Miller Beach Arts and Creative District. They are opening their new show, Polaroids by Julie Schwartz. And what she does with these Polaroids is she actually takes the photo and then abuses the actual physical print to create other things with it. So she actually makes art out of the photograph by not just manipulation like in Photoshop, but actually physical manipulation. Anyway, that will be there. It'll be running, it'll have a reception on Friday, March 15th. So if you get there, gallery hours are Thursdays and Fridays 12 to 6, and Saturdays 6 to 9, Sundays 1 to 4. Again, you can find out information at Miller Arts and Creative District. I stopped by to see them just after our show the last Friday, so great people there.
So how many places do you have? Because we visited this weekend at Southern yes. Shore, and I saw your exhibit. It's really wonderful.
Southern Shore Area Artists Association and the Welcome Center, which I haven't gotten to yet, but I'll have pieces in Studio 659, and I can't remember where else. Sometimes
that's
I have to
exciting.
Look. Yeah, I'm very happy to be able to do that. Finally, Area Artists Association continues with their artistic narrative, and that's at the Indiana Visitor Center at I-80 and 94, Exit 3. That's Kennedy Avenue. The exhibit features about 60 pieces from about 15 artists, a member of the Area Artists Association, which is associated with the Lubesnik Center here in LaPorte County, and they already had their artist reception. That'll be running through April 24th. You can see a wide variety of work. work there. That's where I have four other pieces, by the way.
I know. No, it's a wonderful place to exhibit.
While I'm thinking of it, too, Lori Sauter of the 8585 Broadway Professional Building, the old Chase Bank Building in Merrillville, she is definitely looking for artists to do work for at least a one-month display, though I did say probably a lot of artists would like to have a two-month display. But anyway, she's looking at I'll put out information that if you contact on our website or our email, I'll be happy to send you her information. South Shore Art Cooperative, better known as SLAC, has Indifference and Ecstasy, two sides of the same coin. That continues at the Wild Rose Gallery in Griffith. Dorothy Graydon, by the way, member of the Area Art Association, has three paintings in that show, and that goes through April 20th. And now a brand new gallery, which I also visited on last Friday. It's in the old Boost building. It's called BESS, B-E-S-S Art Gallery, and they're doing their opening exhibit with a Megan Latta, and it's called A Vibrant Life, Color and Its Contrast. And the reception, again, is March 15th from 6 until 9 p.m. She'll have her art there from the 15th, but it's at 5386 Broadway in Merrillville, the old Boost Mobile building. In fact, they haven't changed the sign yet. They just have a little sign in the window. It's a brand new gallery there, so if you have a chance, look up. You can find it on Facebook. It can BESS Art Exposure Gallery, brand new little space to go. So if you want to support those galleries. Again, if you want to support our station, go to WVLP.org/support, and you can support us in whatever level you want. We really appreciate the support of Brouwer Museum and our landlord. Well, now it's time to move to our guests, which we're really excited about.
I am too.
Across the moat, and now we have a couple of castles here. We have George Castle and Connie Castle, and one part of their story, which I'm going to give away at front, but I'll let them talk about themselves, is they met in a dark room. George is a photographer, teaches photography, got a degree, his undergraduate degree from University of Wisconsin, and Connie also met there. She's from Rockford, Illinois, but we'll let them talk about that. Welcome to the show, George and Connie.
Well, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, let's maybe we'll start with Connie first. You know, tell us a little bit about your background. It was interesting when I was looking at your background. You grew up in a Scotch settlement, and how you got from there to here.
Yes, I grew up in a farming settlement outside of Rockford, Illinois, and it was always referred to as the Scotch settlement, and everybody there was related. I think our ancestors all lived together in the same place in Scotland, and then they just kind of got up and moved and left. it was a very different experience growing up on the farm where you knew everyone, and the school had 72 kids in it when I graduated from eighth grade, so that was eight grades of 72 kids. And then going into junior high where there was 500 kids in a class. It was quite an adjustment. Mm-hmm. And my mom was always into art. She was interested in sculpture. She could draw and paint as well, but she was interested in sculpture, had taken some art classes, started college, but then became a farm wife, and so she channeled her art into beautiful flower arrangements.
What kind of sculpture did she do?
I have a bust of my grandfather that she did in clay when she was in those classes. And when I was in at the University of Wisconsin at Platteville, where I met George, I had that cast in bronze. And she really is much better at sculpture than I ever have been able to be. She really was good. In fact, the clay head, which had survived all those years that I took up to Platteville to be cast, the ear was broken off on one side. So I came home one weekend with wax and had her, she sat on the floor and looked at my dad and used his ear and reconstructed the ear on that head of her father. He was reading the newspaper, her father was reading the newspaper when she, did that. So he was sitting pretty still.
Did you work together? I mean, how did she include art in your growing up?
She, she encouraged us to draw. Her clay, she had clay, the oil-based clay that never gets hard, downstairs in the basement. We used to love to play with that, and we had watercolors and so forth. She encouraged me to go into oil painting, and I thought of oil painting as this very sophisticated thing, and so I did this really horrible landscape of a waterfall. It was just terrible, and I hated it, and it wasn't any good. And she said, try painting a picture of Uncle Ed. Do a portrait. Because she saw me every night sitting in the rocking chair that my sister and I always fought over. And I would draw caricatures, and I would draw people, and I'd draw people and people and pages of typing paper in a ring all around the floor, you know, all around the chair every night, because it was people that I loved to do the most and faces the most. So I did this portrait of my Uncle Ed, and it turned out great, so then I was hooked on painting. Then when I got into, I think it was when we lived in Springfield, Illinois, I was working for a university there, Sangamon State University, which doesn't actually exist, has a different name.
It's changed, yeah.
Yeah. I got into acrylics, painting in acrylics, because that had become popular at that time. And then when I moved here and I started taking classes at one point from Dave Clayman, went back into oil painting. So I feel like I know both oil painting and acrylic
very yeah, and they're
well.
Very different. So
yeah, they handle very differently. Well, I actually prefer the oil painting yeah. now. So.
Well, it really explains, like what you just said, explains where, because I've with your work, there's such a sensitivity of expression, no matter yeah. what style you have, and so yeah. So you from a very early age, you had that.
You know, my sister could draw some too, and she was drawing horses one day, and I was 5 years old, and I drew horses based on her horses. And my mother said, "You can draw better than Betty Ann." Well, that was it. I had an audience. I was appreciated for being an artist, so away I went.
Wow.
A way to get attention.
So before we get you together in your story, we'll go back with George. No, that's okay. But I thought it would be kind of neat. We got that far. Let's, George, tell us about you. You're from Milwaukee originally.
Right. I was born in Milwaukee, and I grew up there for a while, and then we moved out to a little town just west of Milwaukee, a little town called Delafield, Wisconsin, which yeah. is on a lake there. And so we lived out there for about 5 years, and I got, you know, interested in all the things you do at a lake, you know, fishing and swimming and boating and all that. And we moved back eventually to Wauwatosa, sort of a suburb of Milwaukee, and went to high school and things there. So at an early age, I think it was when I was about 10, I got a Brownie camera for a birthday present.
Wow.
And that kind of hooked me on photography. I was always carrying that camera on school events, you know, going on a field trip or something. I was always the guy taking pictures. And then I started, a little later, I started developing my own film and making contact prints in my mother's kitchen at night. You know, I didn't have a dark room. Couldn't even really cover the windows well, but it was good enough, and went on from there. And then when I got into, I think it was junior high school, they were looking for a photographer for the school newspaper that I heard about somehow. And so I went and told them I was interested. And there was another fella interested too, and he said, "Well, both of you go out and shoot a roll of film around the school, and we'll see which ones we like the best." And they happened to pick me. So then I got into taking all kinds of pictures for the school, you know, doing stuff. And then in high school, it was the school newspaper and the yearbook. I remember they gave me a big old, they said, "Here, use this camera." So they gave me a 4x5 speed graphic.
Oh, good old speed graphics.
Old press camera, you know, like you see in the old guys in the 50s running around with the fedora hat and everything.
Do you have the hat? Do you have the hat?
I have hats. So I'm out there taking pictures of football games with this, and basketball, and swimming meets, and all this kind of stuff. I really kind of liked that camera. I wish I still had it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, look at that.
I got a friend of mine, an artist friend, gave me her old Graflex camera. Not the speed graphic, but it was a Crown graphic. But it needs some repair. The problem is with that format size is very expensive to, you know, shoot film with that anymore, that size. But it was kind of fun to use. And you didn't have a light meter. There wasn't, you know, you kind of just learned the film, and you learned what settings you had to use for various situations. So it was kind of fun then. And then in college, I got involved with, my major was geology, and I specialize in exploration engineering geology there. And I got involved with the Society of Mining Engineers or something. And they had a technical newspaper, so I wound up taking pictures for them of mines and different kinds of engineering kind of things. So that kept me pretty busy through school. So it was mostly almost photojournalism, my background,
right,
through college. But then I met Connie.
And yeah, we have to hear that story.
Well, let her tell the story.
I worked at the audio visual department, which nobody even knows what that is anymore, because those things don't
exist. It's now called Media Center.
Yeah. And I was doing artwork and lettering and ink, things associated with ink drawings and so forth. And they hired this photographer student to come in and take care of that part. And I was supposed to be his boss and tell him what to do. And I'm like, what?
Well, that's a good foundation for a marriage, right? Yeah.
So he would be in the dark room, and I would go in and say, well, this is how you develop film and stuff. And he says, I know all that, but what do you want? You know, so he was looking for me to be a leader on the whatever projects that we were working on. And this was like totally out of my wheelhouse. I didn't know what to tell him to do at that point. But we like to joke that we met in the dark room that way.
Well, that's cute. So dark room. Yeah, it's. I remember my dad had a small dark room in a house, and George will appreciate this story. He gave me a little camera. I probably was only like 7 or 8, and was probably a little dinky roll camera.
Instamatic.
Yeah, well, it was a roll camera. And so I went and took pictures, and I was anxious to see them, so I opened the back so I could see my pictures. He said, nah, it doesn't work that way. So anyone, any photographer will appreciate that.
Yeah.
And you know, what you were saying, too, is, and we'll talk more about the transition from film to digital and how it maintains, but I think there's something about the discipline of film. If you go on a project, you load a certain speed of film, and now all of a sudden you have to make the other settings of that triad work in the exposure range. And, you know, I think about that sometimes, you know. And I know I'm guilty of this now. I go out and shoot something. Okay, I need to dial up the ISO or dial it down or something like that and everything. So you both graduated from what, University of Wisconsin?
At mm-hmm. Platteville. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then where did we go from there?
We went down to Springfield, Illinois. Well, we were out west for a while.
Yeah, I got a job with a mining exploration company in the Sierras. Had an office in Reno.
I didn't even know what he had, you know, married him because I fell in love with him. And then I find out that, you know, well, what does that mean as far as a job? I had no idea. So George says, well, I got a job offer here in California. Let's go there. And I'm like, So we ended up in a little cow town.
Up in the mountains.
Up in the mountains of the Sierra Mountains.
Yeah, about 100 miles northwest of Reno, but in California.
But we didn't stay there very long because, you know, you go from having your senior art show in your senior year and working at a job and taking classes, and I was carrying an overload that semester, and then you go out there and bing, you know. Nothing to do, no place to go, you're isolated. We were outsiders. Fortunately, the company, the Canadian mining company that he worked for, took us in. But eventually, we moved back then to Springfield, Illinois for 4 years, then we moved to Green Bay, and then we moved here. So one thing after another. I forget why we...
Yeah, what brought you out here?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a job, I guess. A job.
Right. I was in Springfield. I worked for the Illinois Department of Highways in the materials section, doing geology for them on construction materials, you know, crushed stone, those kind of things. And
obviously, I just went wherever he went.
Then we were there for like 4 years or so and then moved up to Green Bay, Wisconsin, where I was working for a geotechnical consultant for a while. And then a job opened up down here. And we came down here, and that's where
it's
we've
stuck.
Been for the last 40 years.
I think by then I had decided enough with the moving and not knowing, you know, people. And Long Beach reminded me of the close-knit community that I grew up in. You know, it was a small town.
And then your lake community as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was great for kids. We had 2 kids by then, so.
So I'm interested in the geology, because that was one of my favorite, geology was one of my favorite studies at mm-hmm. the university as well. So how did you go from this?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
No, I was just going to say, I want to take a quick break here, and then you could answer her question. You're listening to WVP VLP, where Art on the Air, and you're listening to George and Connie Castle here. And again, you can hear us streaming at WVLP.org, and you can hear the show later on Monday at 5 o'clock, or go to breck.com. AOTA. So go ahead and finish that question.
So you had a lot of photography in high school, but in your area where you grew up, were you interested in rocks? Is that how you became interested in geology, or was it more?
I was interested a little bit, and I didn't realize how much I was until I started out taking some a program in electrical engineering at mm-hmm. the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, and then I really didn't really get into that. There was something about it I just I got into it because I had a lot of friends who were interested in electronics and ham radio and stuff, and we got into that. But then once I got into it, I thought, eh. So then I was looking around, and I found this school out in southwest Wisconsin, and they had a program in geology. Well, let's give that a try. So I went out there, and I really enjoyed it. The landscape there is beautiful. You know, it's very hilly in that driftless area.
So beautiful.
And it was an old mining district. And I got working for a mining company part-time. It was a company called New Jersey Zinc that had an office there in Platteville. And I started out taking pictures for them, doing technical photography. They would bring in drill cores that they were doing on a prospect in northern Wisconsin. And we had to photograph these drill cores. It was easier to deal with the slides, transparencies of the boxes rather than move all these big boxes of rocks around all the time when you were trying to show somebody something. So I got involved doing that. I did surveying work for them and prospecting work in the summer. Had an office on Main Street in Galena, Illinois one summer. That was, if you've ever been to Galena, it's a very scenic little town, so it was kind of fun. That was sort of the transition. I got interested in cave exploring. I was part
Me
of a
too.
Spelunking group and rock climbing and
it
motorcycles and did all those crazy things you do when you're young, you know. Yeah. I don't know how many times that I almost killed myself.
The more
I think about it, I think, oh, man, how did I ever make it? But
yeah, we had some good camping trips where George would take us around to different caves, and I got my brother and sister had gone and our old friends from college, and we had quite a number of adventures with this cave exploring. And it wasn't so much the caving that I enjoyed as the camping out in the nature. And it would be on the back end of somebody's farm, you know, and
sure.
the limestone cliffs on these Wisconsin farms. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful place.
So the back into the photography. So photography served you as maybe what I call, you know, as with me, avocational. You did it to support your current avocation for the large part.
Kind of. I mean, it was a passion that was
right.
there in the background that lasted all through those years. And I just expressed it in different ways as, you know, grew older and different opportunities presented themselves.
As our kids began to grow up, you know, Paul was out of the house and Sarah was still there, but she was in high school. A friend of mine got me roped into taking classes with Dave Clayman at Indiana University Northwest. And I said, you know, let's go work on our master's degree. You need to work on, you know, it'll be something we have in common then with the kids moving away. And George has this ability to reinvent himself from the geologist, and then he got into computers, you know, and he was a computer scientist person for a while, and you know, it was one thing after another. And I was always straight art, painting. So we both decided to go back and get our master's degree, and that was when he stepped into getting his master's in photography. So that interest that had always been there in his background came forward.
Yeah, I was able to polish it. Actually, before then, when Connie was taking some of those classes at IUN, I started taking a couple there too, part-time with Gary Wilk, just basic photography stuff, and it was kind of fun. You know, I got to do things. And
sure.
before then, I had never had any training. I was always totally self-taught. And when that happens, you always manage to skip certain things, and you come up to doing something. All of a sudden, you're stuck because you don't know how to get by it. Well, now this helped fill in those gaps, and then going to graduate school took it up the next level. And that's when digital imaging was first starting to come out. This was the early 90s. So we had one of the first, I don't know if it was version 1, but it was version 2 or 3 of Photoshop that we were working with. So I got to learn a lot about theme-based work
right.
and some of the technical aspects of, you know, zone system photography and all that stuff, and got to process color film and learn how that works. So that was a fun experiment. And then based on all that, and Connie's been involved with the Area Artists Association almost since its inception, which
yes.
will be almost 40 years
I
next
know.
Year.
In the Nest, we're going to have the 40-year celebration exhibit for
yeah.
the Area Artists Association.
So I was
I'm looking
always
forward
kind of
to
involved
it.
With that a little bit on
right.
the side, because I would go to things with her, and then I got to be a member at some point, and I started doing some work and actually exhibiting it.
Yeah, when we moved here to this area, my neighbor said take a class with Gertrude Harbart, And through that class, I made a group of friends with the women that were taking classes with Gertrude, and as well as Gertrude, that were lifelong friends. Most of them were old enough to be my mother, you know. Some weren't. There's still some that are my age. But we continued to be extremely close. And they were the ones that said, oh, we need to get an art center in Michigan City. And they, just like George dragged me into going to this part of the country or that part of the country, they dragged me into getting involved in establishing an art center here in town. And that was, you know, the kids were quite small then, so I couldn't do as much as some of them did. But so that was quite an experience. And then from that, they developed the Area Artists Association as well as the Art Center Guild, which doesn't exist anymore. So I was right there at the beginning. And a good thing, too, because I got grandfathered into the organization, so I never had to be juried like everyone else does.
And now, was that part of the foundation of Lebesnik?
Yes.
What you were
at that time, it was, well, it was called the Communities. It was actually the John
G. Blank.
G. Blank Community right. Center for the Arts, but it was known widely as a Community Center for the Arts. And then when they moved from 8th Street, they were on Franklin for a little while, and then the Lebesniks donated that building, so it became the Lebesnik.
Okay, very good. You're listening to George and Connie Castle on Art on the Air. So it's a very interesting background here about how you've merged together and everything. So why don't we talk first, George, about some of your photography that you do now in exhibits. I know you had an exhibit about a year ago at the Chesterton Art Center, or maybe a little, and both you and Connie, but you kind of departed from some of the stuff. You did some interesting things there.
Yeah, I usually do wind up doing two or three or maybe four exhibits a year. It depends. Connected with area artist exhibits, usually. Sometimes it's separate.
Do you have to get juried in now, or are you?
Oh, I was
you would never have to worry about getting juried in anywhere, though, Connie.
I don't remember.
Probably been a member of, 20 years or something? Ever long. Been a president and done different things with it. But, yeah, most of my exhibits are connected with the area artists. So currently I'm working, I'm interested in zines. Now, that may be a new thing for a lot of people, although it's been around for a while. And a zine is kind of like a self-published magazine. That means there's often a big handmade aspect to it. It's usually duplicated through relatively inexpensive means, you know, through a home printer or a copy machine, something like that. It's not handled through a regular publisher. It's all self-published. And photo zines are a subdivision of that. There's literary zines, poetry zines, art zines, and photo zines. So I got in. There's a couple of guys that I follow on Facebook, YouTube. That were talking about this. I thought, I'm going to try that. And I got interested in it. And I find it fascinating because I like working on theme-based projects, kind of, you know, that kind of work where you're following a theme through and all the images are connected that way. And having it self-published, I mean, I can publish photos. You know, it's relatively inexpensive compared to making big prints. It's easy for people to collect because they're inexpensive. Usually the zines, like some of the ones I have here, sell for $5. So people can help pass these around so you guys can.
We'll hold them up to the microphone so our audience can see. These are wonderful.
You can get an idea of what they are. So inside the front cover, there's typically a little write-up that explains what's going on in the zine, and then the series of pictures afterwards. Sometimes there's captions that help connect everything, and sometimes not.
Wow, these are fabulous. This is like a great format.
So I really love the zine thing. And this is all in connection with the a year ago, I was talking with Hannah from Lebesnik Center, and they were talking about maybe doing a zine fest thing there, and I got involved with that because I had some knowledge of doing that, and I had my students at Purdue making zines as part of the photography class. So I got involved with that. So the Zine Fest is coming up at Lebesnik on the 27th, was that the date?
April 27th.
It's a Saturday afternoon, 1 to 5. And they have like 30 tables set up in the main gallery there. So there'll be one or more exhibitors at each table. So there'll be a lot of different kinds of zines there. children's books and, you know, social issue things and political things and comedy things and cartoon, you know, like graphic novel things and art zines and photo zines, you know, like Laurel Azard, you know, Laurel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she makes, besides her other things, she makes some zines, mm-hmm. small booklets like this that are hand-drawn things, but there's other friends of ours that do them also. Connie has made some.
And he got he got me involved in it then. I got interested in it, and then the area artists, we got interested in it. And fortunately, because the area artists are probably the only ones that have such visual zines. Most of the other zines, I think, are more about the writing.
Yeah.
And it gives, one of the things that I enjoy about it, it gives me a chance to mix the artwork and the writing. I did one for this year that's based on my paintings and then kind of little poetic word paintings, word pictures about a particular painting. And then I'm also going to have my children's, I've got three children's books, things that I self-published. That is, I paid for the publishing,
right.
So through Creative Space and through Beecher, bless their hearts, you know, that I'm going to have there, too.
And
we're hoping she reads.
Yeah, we'll have you read, but you also illustrated your children's book, because that was part of the exhibit at Chester and Arts Center that you did with George.
That's what mine was, and I had a friend who said, I think you could do children's books, and I've been hearing that all my life, but I always blew it off because I wanted to be a serious painter, you know,
right.
in a museum somewhere in New York or something. But I thought, you know, maybe I'll follow that. And she got me involved in the Society of Children's,
Children Books Writers and Illustrators.
Yeah, Writers and Illustrators.
SCBWI.
Yeah. And so I belonged to a writer's group. But she was the one that encouraged me, and she was also the one, for instance, this one that I brought along today was based on a family story when I was growing up, when I was probably 3 years old, maybe four. My brother and I were playing under the back porch, because there was sandy dirt there that we could play in with the trucks and the wagons and stuff. And there was, I can remember a couple of images from being down underneath the porch. And I'm not sure how, but we discovered a huge bull snake there that was like 3-4 feet long. So here I am, maybe 3 years old, my brother's 5 years old, and my mom is in the kitchen that's just, you know, off of the porch above, so she heard us shrieking. And she came out and pinned the snake to the ground. I can't remember what she pinned it with. I had it in my mind it was a stick, but my brother said it was a shovel, so I don't know. Pinned this big bull snake to the ground and sent my brother down to the barn to get my dad to save the day, you know, get rid of the snake. And this is why I'm scared of snakes to this day, probably.
Oh, I imagine. Your Indiana Jones moment there.
So anyway, I started this book, and I was telling my friend, this woman that suggested I get into the children's book about it, and she said, now remember, kids want to be the heroes in these children's books. So although it's cats in the actual book, instead of the parents being the one that saved them, the cats had to save themselves. So that gave me a springboard to share that story and then also, you know.
Well, we'd love to hear just a little bit about it. That's Connie Castles, and what's the title of the book?
Oh, Meow.
Oh, Meow. And I just have to say, when I saw your pieces at Chesterman, they were so moving in themselves as far as the story. There were times that were just so touching, almost tear up with some of them. So.
Oh, thank you. Well, I started out with that book. That was a different book, and I didn't know anything. And I painted them on these large 30 by 40 inch canvases. Well, if you're going to find a publisher, they can't take a canvas that big on a stretcher and run it through a printer, you know, a copier. So I learned from that.
Right.
But you
have a photographer who could take really high-quality pictures of
right,
that. See,
right.
So there
and
you
that's
go.
That's what we did when we had it. But it was one of those learning
and
things.
And before you start, we're listening to WVLP, Art on the Air, on 103.1 FM, and we're going to hear Connie Castle read from her book.
Margaret watched Tommy Kitten as he smacked the pebble with his furry paw. He was delighted to see the little stone sail through the dusty air towards Margaret Kitten. She pounced on it and sent the pebble spinning over to a hole in the sand. The two kittens gathered around the hole as they brushed cobwebs off their ears. They peered down into the dark hole, searching for the pebble. Suddenly, they saw it coming back up through the hole, followed by a gray head covered in scales. Angry eyes glared at them. Too late, they realized it was a huge bull snake, and it was between them and their way outside from under the porch. Tommy grabbed a nearby stick and with one mighty thrust pinned the snake's head to the ground. Hurry, get Mama now. Hurry, hurry, I can't hold it very long. Margaret raced off and found Mama Cat washing her fur. Mama sprang into action and skidded to a stop at the entrance to under the porch, and not a moment too soon. Tommy was shaking from exhaustion as the snake writhed around in its struggle to be free. Mama grabbed the huge snake body behind the head with her teeth and quickly dragged it far down the path. The snake snapped its jaws at her helplessly. She dropped the snake and sprang away, running back up the hill. The snake slithered off through the grass. Panting, Mama grabbed Tommy by the scruff of his neck and carried him back to their cardboard box on the porch. Margaret followed close behind. Are you okay? She kept asking, washing each frightened little face. You were a very brave kitten. That was a brave thing to do. The kittens mewed, their eyes still big and round. But soon everyone was purring and they fell asleep, snuggled in Mama's soft fur and their old tattered blue blanket. The kittens avoided the space under the porch after that and soon forgot about the snake until late one summer evening. The kittens had been catching lightning bugs as they took flight from the dewy grass. One landed on Margaret's nose and she crossed her eyes, trying to see it clearly. The bug turned its glowing light on and then off again before she could get her eyes focused on it. Then the lightning bug spread its wings and flew off. Margaret looked around. It had gotten quite dark down here in the long grass by the river. She couldn't see Tommy or Mama anywhere. She started back up the path, but then she saw something move in the dim light. What was it? Margaret's fur stood up in spiky points. She was getting scared. There it was again. Something was thrashing around on the path ahead. It was too late to run away. Then she realized what it was. It was the big gray bull snake. It was very upset, thrashing around on the dirt path like it had when Tommy pinned it down with the stick. Margaret saw what was happening. The snake's long body had gotten tangled in baler twine and it was trapped. She realized that it would be unable to hunt for food or escape the hot sun and it would die. Margaret's heart was pounding, even though she knew she could get away from the snake now. But she hated to see anybody suffer. It took all her courage to crawl up to the snake. The snake flinched. Then Margaret began to chew on the twine, cutting the strands with her sharp teeth. More than once she started to run off, but she remembered how brave Tommy had been that day when he pinned the snake so she could escape. At last, the snake shuddered and pulled free. It turned to face her. Would it eat her? It looked at her through the gloom for a moment, nodded its head slightly, and then turned and disappeared into the dark. Margaret's legs still trembled, but she knew she was safe now. She hurried up the path toward home. Ahead, she could see the porch light as the stars popped out in the sky above her and a warm breeze ruffled her fur. There were Mama and Tommy waiting for her on the steps. What a story she had to tell them. The end.
What wow. A great story, Connie.
And where are these books available?
It's going to be available at the Zine Fest.
Okay.
And you can inquire at the Lebesnik little shop that
the gift
they
shop,
have there. Yeah, I think they have some on hand and they can get some more.
That's fantastic.
And some of Connie's zines can double as a coloring book too.
Yeah.
This one you almost could color because it's mostly a monochrome. These are very interesting. The books that George have are what I call half folio size, which would basically like you take an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper and fold it. So that's like our program size. They're very interesting. We wish we could show them to you.
You'll just have to go to the Zine Fest.
You'll have to see them at the Zine Fest.
Yes. It's a very exciting afternoon. I really enjoyed it last year.
It's fun for the artists to trade zines with other artists.
And the work is so interesting. Each table.
You know, it's funny that last Zine Fest was very popular, and a majority of the people who were there, as visitors, had never been in that art center before. So it brought in a whole new audience of people, and there's exhibitors there from, you know, different parts of the country. They're not just local people.
I have to say, looking at this, it's something I think, you know, maybe I'll do that sometime, because I have stuff that's thematic, like lighthouses. I have a whole series of different things, and that sounds like something I might try out just from your inspiration here.
Okay, well, I'm glad I inspired you.
Now, you also teach photography.
Yeah, I do. I teach part-time at Purdue North Central, or I guess it's Northwest now.
They call Westville. I know. I had to relearn the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, I do a digital photography class out there. And then over at Prairie State, I teach history of photography and art appreciation and sometimes art history. It's kind of interesting. I'll bring in the art photography history class, I'll bring in some old film cameras sometime to show them. And it's amazing, you know, they don't know what it is.
Right.
It's like the dial telephone.
And it's funny, they're not that old. And they'll say something like, oh, that's so last century. And they'll look in the back for the LCD screen and things like that, you know. And it's a whole different experience. So I like to accumulate some of these old cameras to bring in just to give them the experience of seeing what they were and getting feel for it.
I held on to my film cameras until Canon introduced the 5D, which was the first affordable, quote-unquote, full frame. But I also would get my photos, and again, it was on a disc, and they were not RAW, they were JPEGs. But yeah, because I had such an investment in lenses. I mean, it was like, they were not compatible. And I skipped the entire EOS generation of, you know, film camera. So mine was the old FD lens in Canon, and they were not compatible with EOS at all. So finally, I didn't do my own developing. This was mostly like my theater photography. I needed it done fast, so I had to send to the lab process and started getting sloppy there toward the end. That was really the incentive to go digital, because it was like, unless you're developing your own, it really came back terrible. So that's interesting. So, and you are retired from geology or the other type of work?
Yeah, I did geology for like 20 years, okay. And then I changed over and became an IT manager.
Okay.
Quite a change there. I was an IT consultant for a while, and then I kind of retired from full-time work and just started teaching part-time. I taught at Purdue and Prairie State, and I also taught at downtown Chicago at Westwood College, their Chicago Loop campus. They've since shut down that school, but I taught a variety of subjects there, including, you know, digital photography and graphic design and all those kinds of things.
Very good. Now, Connie, have you done anything teaching with your master's?
Yeah, after we got the master's degree, one of the teachers there at Governor State got me a job at Prairie State College. And I was started out teaching painting, and then it was drawing. So I was there 10 years, and then I had a health problem that came up, and I dragged George into the class to help me. And he ended up having to finish out the semester for me because I was so, you know, I couldn't walk. I was having an infection in my spine. And that was kind of how he got into teaching the art appreciation classes there, because that's what I was doing at that point. I spent about 10 years at Prairie State and 10 years at Purdue.
Okay.
Teaching drawing.
Very good.
Connie has taught a lot of children's classes out of the home.
Yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah, for many years.
I've done a number of workshops at the Chesterton Art Center and Lebesnik and so on. I've got a smartphone photography class coming up on April 9th, think it is. It's at the New Buffalo Library.
Oh.
They called me up. They got my name from somebody and said, we want to have this class, and would you take it? Jeez, it might. Okay.
Well, you know, and they're out there.
Yeah. It was one of my regrets not taking some of your digital walkabout classes.
Well, and that's what photography is to most people now, is their phone and not realizing the difference. But, I mean, you know, obviously we know the technical reasons why it's not going to be as good as when you're using a professional camera, but you can get some pretty decent pictures out of a smartphone.
Yeah. There's a guy, he's actually in Platteville, Wisconsin. And he was a newspaper photographer, I believe, out of Dubuque. But then he got injured, or they closed down the paper, or whatever it was. And he started taking pictures with a cell phone. And on the way, driving in and back and forth to his house, there was this farm field with a big old oak tree. And he started taking pictures of this oak tree every day. And he's made a whole career out of this tree. And he's got a website. If you want to look it up, it's called That Tree. And he's got calendars and books and lecture tours, and everything is done with his cell phone.
Okay. Wow. Well, you know, even some of the Hans photography in the gallery, they were cell phone based. The people went in there and actually, and I was amazed at that, but they had like a little discussion on each photographer's work, and they were all cell phone based and everything. Have you thought about doing any drone photography yet?
You know, my son got me a drone for a present and oh, a camera on it, and I just have never gotten into it yet.
Okay.
I had some problems with the operation of it. There's something that's off balance because it doesn't want to like just take off. It wants to skitter off to the side all the time. And there's a
couldn't possibly be the person who's running it.
No, couldn't be me. I think it's something with a trim set up on the device. So anyways, I will get to that. But
I know it seems
my interest is mainly just walking around photography. Yeah. I'm kind of loosely associated with this group that's the Walking Artist Group. It's a worldwide group, actually, and where walking around becomes a major part of the art-making process. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I do with the zines. I'll get a theme in mind, a place in mind, and then I'll go out walking and see what I find.
For me, it was always job-related. Whenever you would have this, I would be working. And so,
yeah.
But now I have more flexibility.
Except on Fridays at 11 o'clock, right?
Except on Fridays.
Yeah. Well, anything we haven't covered about you folks? You know, we've gotten a little bit of your background and everything, and I'm sure we could almost do another hour here. But
I would love to know what direction you're thinking about, what you're working on now, what you want to do in the future.
Time, at the same time that I'm pursuing this children's book thing, I'm also still painting. And what I've done is I've given myself a problem, a compositional problem, and that's combining deep space, compressed space, and flat space. When I was studying with Gertrude, she told us about deep space is realism, you know, so you're drawing to make it look like a real thing. And then compressed space is like Picasso, where things are flattened down as if they're as thick as a piece of cardboard. And flat space is when they're touching one another, they're so flat they're not even overlapping. So I'm trying to combine all those in one painting and using nature as my inspiration.
The vet paintings? Animal paintings?
Yeah.
No.
George, how about you? What's in the future for you besides the drone?
I'm more interested in older techniques, in older digital cameras, in film cameras. I'm experimenting with cyanotype and some of the non-silver processes. Get my darkroom cranked up again. I'm interested in not trying to jump on the latest technology all the time.
Right.
I'm trying to concentrate on the image making and not the equipment. So I'd like to do a little more film-based work.
Very good. I know a lot of what I call equipment photographers out there. They got the new greatest thing, but it's like they really don't have a photographic eye. So,
yeah.
Well, we'd like to thank you for being here. We had George and Connie Castle. Great having you on Art on the Air and sharing your experience. We hope to have you back some other time when the zines are a real inspiration to me, and Connie's book is just marvelous. And again, I saw those other pictures at Chestnut Arts Center, and they were wonderful. So, anyway, you've been listening to Art on the Air, and we're heard every Friday at 11 o'clock to noon, rebroadcast at Monday at 5 p.m. Your hosts, Larry Brechner and Esther Golden. We'd like to thank Greg Kovacs, our station manager.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Yeah, he's a big help to us. Hey, if you're interested again in being a guest, send us information about your arts-related events appear on here. Email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. You can also hear our show archive, BRECH.com/AOTA. You can hear previous shows. Next week, we have James Neary. He's a singer-songwriter you're bringing on.
James is, boy, I don't have enough beautiful words for James, so please listen in.
That'll be fantastic.
It'll be a treat.
Yes, we love having our original guests. So we hope you enjoyed today's show. Again, rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. We'll see you right here next week, 103.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha.